Okay. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, freed from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Excellent. Okay, very good. Now, sometimes one of the things which Ajahn Chah would always teach me, whatever you do, just give it everything you've got. And that's one of the reasons why when we do chanting, you really try and put your heart into it, even though that particular chant, I don't know how many hundreds or maybe thousands of times I've done that chant, you still listen to what you're saying, and when you're chanting, it does have a very powerful meaning to it. And it's one of the reasons why that I often call, when we do chanting like this, I call it brainwashing. And it is brainwashing. Whatever living beings there may be, omitting none. That's everybody. Mr. Putin, Kim Jong-un, everybody. May all beings be happy and well, including just some of you, maybe your exes, your bosses at work, people have hurt you, and you know, things which you've done, which maybe you did not like. Each one of them, we embrace everybody. How on earth can we do that, we always think? How can we look at life, and no matter what happens to us, just embrace it all and make sure we know that it's something which is very useful and very happy? A good example of that is just even last Saturday morning, when I was going on alms round in Perth, just outside our city centre in Nollamara, that one of the people who, one of the last people who puts food into our bowl, he has a little dog called Amy. And usually, if there's any sausages which I get on the alms round, I usually save them for the dog, because Amy loves those sausages. But then the person who owns Amy, the little dog, told me that whenever Amy, after eating the sausages, does a poo, he does actually collect the poo and dig it under a banana tree he has in his backyard. And now his bananas are actually ripe. They're giving their first fruit. And so once they had the bananas via Amy the dog, they put those bananas in my bowl. And they were really delicious, because they were literally dog poo bananas, but those dog poo came from the sausages which I gave them. It's a wonderful little simile. If you're kind to others, the kindness comes back to you. So because I was kind to the little doggy, then I got these very delicious bananas back. So, what's the difference between a sausage and a banana? It's just the different parts of the process. I didn't say what happens in the middle of that process, because sometimes people feel that that's disgusting. But whatever happens to us in life, we always turn into something beautiful. Via a dog, via the dog's poo, and via the beautiful bananas. So whatever happens to you in your life, you can always see something positive in whatever happens to you in life. I haven't been online a while, simply because I went overseas. And one of the things which happened when I went overseas was to teach a meditation retreat. And that meditation retreat was taught in Kuala Lumpur. When I was teaching in Kuala Lumpur, the first time I arrived in this Mahayana Buddhist temple, they were really, really concerned. And their concern was that they had put me in this little room at the very top of the temple. It's a very big Mahayana temple. And where we had our lunch and where we had our interviews, that was in the downstairs, the basement. Which that meant that every day I had to walk up 6 stories of stairs because the lift had broken down. And that was for the whole of the 9 days retreat. I think it was 7 days retreat, to be honest. The 7 days retreat, the elevator, the lift didn't work. And they were very concerned, Ajahn Brahm, can you take this? And I said, well, I've got no choice really, because either I eat and stay down in the eating and interview room and don't teach, or I stay up the top and teach and just sleep just in the room above the hall, but then I won't be able to eat anything. So instead, what we did was just imagine that this was wonderful exercise for me. And so I did those about 4 or 5 times a day, up 6 stories of stairs without any lift. And afterwards, 3 or 4 times a day for 6 or 7 days, I thought, maybe when I get back to Perth, people will start saying, oh, Ajahn Brahm, you've lost weight. But I didn't. I didn't lose any weight. Really disappointed. I think it is because my body is such a size now. It's actually proving what I've said for so many years, that this is not fat. This is kindness, loving kindness, because I've been put doing loving kindness for so many years as a monk, 48 years as a monk, and every year your heart grows a little bit bigger. And because it grows a little bit bigger every year, it pushed my rib cage a long time ago, and the only thing it can do now is to go down and out. So I proved it by doing lots of exercise. I didn't eat that much, and lots of exercise, I still didn't lose any weight. Still the same old Ajahn Brahm, and still the same old silly stories. I've actually found out what it really is. It is not overeating. I looked online, in a book, because I always wanted to know what anorexia meant. And anorexia, apparently, if you look in the book, it says that you look in a mirror and you think you're fat. Well, that's me. Every time I look in the mirror, I think I'm fat. So now I know what I'm suffering from. Okay, I'm only just being a little bit silly. But nevertheless, a little bit of happiness is really important in our world, especially when we're doing some meditation and learning how to live a life in a world which is never perfect. Elevators go wrong. Planes get delayed. Things sometimes get wrong. But that is actually life. And so sometimes we feel that when we say something has gone wrong, we should never even think like that. It's not that something's gone wrong. This is the world. It's always like this. So sometimes things go not what we expect. And sometimes they are what we expect. And actually, after a while, what we do to solve the problems of the world is we expand our expectations. So after a while, we can expect anything. And imagine if you could expect anything, then whatever happens to you in your life, you can always say, yes, I expected that. So what is actually happening here is you're not, as one of those quotes which I concocted years ago, that don't ask from this world something it can never give you. In other words, just don't ask much at all. And just look at this life as like an adventure, going to places which you don't know, you don't know what to expect. But as long as you have a peaceful mind and a happy mind, you always tend to survive anything. And that is one of the beautiful things about the meditation. It teaches you the secret of peace and also the power of this happiness. I know that happiness is not much different than kindness. Whatever you're kind to, if you have an attitude of kindness to the world, you're actually creating happiness with kindness. Even simple things, you're just kind to somebody else. You help them, you give them something, and when you are kind to them, they become happier. Just a little thing, like a smile. When people come and they say they've been to psychologists because they've got depression or they've got all sorts of anxiety disorders. This is one gentleman did this a few days ago. He came a long way from Europe and he wanted some psychological help. Nothing was really helping him. And so I told him, every time you get up in the morning, go to the bathroom. When you go to the bathroom, you can go to the toilet first of all if you want, but look in the mirror and just get your two fingers out and smile at yourself. Because whenever you see someone smiling at you, you smile back. And this one, you're smiling at yourself. And so it becomes a double happiness there. You know, I did that for 2 years. That's one of my first meditation teachers taught me that. Put that little bit of extra effort when you just look at your face in the mirror. Don't look at your face in the mirror going, I feel terrible. Why do I have to get up so early in the morning? Can't someone else get up early for me? No, you get up early and you put energy into it. That's what I remember Ajahn Chah always used to say that as well. When you wake up in the morning, jump out of bed, zippity-doo-dah, what a lovely day. And then look at the clock and you find it's, I shouldn't have to say this, this morning I got up. You know what time I got up in the morning, this morning? 2:45 a.m. That's okay, I had energy, not that bad. So you get up, zippity-doo-dah, what a lovely day. and you look at the clock afterwards, not, you know, before you wake up. Well, if you do that, you get some more energy in your life. So whatever you do, you put some energy into it. That's why in the chanting, you'll put as much kindness and care into that chanting as possible. And at the end, when we go the sadhu, 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 really put some effort into it. And what you're doing is just celebrating this moment. It's the same when we meditate. We sit down, we get ourselves comfortable, and then we just breathe, and breathe in as beautifully as you possibly can. That's one of the meditation techniques of the monk. He's still alive, a wonderful monk, Ajahn Ganha. And Ajahn Ganha always used to, I used to ask him, well, he stayed here for a rains retreat many years ago. And we used to ask him, please, can you give a Dhamma talk? And all he'd ever do was actually say, okay, sit down, close your eyes, breathe in, sabai was the word he used. Sabai means like really beautiful, you know, wonderful, soft, gentle, as beautiful as you possibly can. Breathe in, sabai. Breathe out, sabai. And put lots of energy and effort into making it a beautiful breath. And you do that for three or four breaths, and as if the mind gets the hang of it, and every breath becomes absolutely delightful. And as long as you have enough confidence and faith in this monk, and you look at his face, he's got a really big, happy, smiley, moon-like face, and always giggling, he was that one who would pat king cobras on the head. And he was also the one, was reminded of him the other day, because when we first built this monastery from which I'm teaching now, Bodhinyana Monastery in Perth, he was staying here, as I was mentioning, and the mayor of Serpentine, Jawadal Shire, came to visit, basically to check us out. Who were we? And so when he came, he was wearing this jacket and jacket, shirt and tie. He was well-dressed. But you know, he was, I've got to be honest with you, he was more fat than I was. And so that his jacket was only one button on it, and that was almost like threatening to pop off at any time because of the pressure of his tummy on this jacket. So anyhow, he should wear robes. Robes are much easier when you're fat because they don't burst open. They just kind of fall off. But anyway, this monk, Ajahn Ganha, went right up to him and he started patting him on the tummy. This was the mayor, okay, and started rubbing his tummy. But this monk, Ajahn Ganha, had such a beautiful smile on his face that the mayor just burst out giggling. I think the best words to describe it, he was like chuckling like a little baby. And he was like the mayor, the head of the council. And we had a sort of a building application in for our main hall. So anyhow, the mayor melted. And from that time on, he became one of our best friends. He was our neighbour, a big farmer in the area. And it was wonderful to have him on side from that day on. Just because of some extra bit of kindness. I thought it was a wrong thing to do. I never seen that as part of the protocol of greeting, of visiting important person like a mayor of the Shire. But Ajahn Ganha didn't know, he just did it anyway. It was beautiful to see the result. That's one of the reasons. You have this kindness, you give it everything you've got, and it's amazing what happens. Things always turn out well when you do it in a beautiful way and just commit yourself totally. I know that because one of the questions you often get is when people say they've got an important decision to make in life, what should they do? Which way should they go? And one of the things which I encourage them to do is, doesn't really matter which way you want to go, make the decision, and then don't be a person who's just worried themselves so sick about making the decision in the first place. Once they've made the decision, they've got no energy left to make sure that decision works. Make the decision quickly, commit to it, and then put the energy into making that decision work. A lot of times people just are afraid of decisions. But it doesn't really matter whether you say, like, turn left or turn right in life. What really matters is what you do after you've made the decision. You commit to it, you make it work. It's amazing what you can do when, you know, even sometimes you don't make those decisions. Even actually coming here to Perth, Ajahn Chah sent me here. And you may remember the resolution I made as a young monk. I said to myself, I'm not going to ask to go anywhere. Now, Ajahn Chah is my teacher. Ajahn Chah can tell me to go here, can tell me to go there, and I won't ask. So, now, Ajahn Chah would send me to go to a monastery. When he asked me to come back, I'd come back. But all that time, I would never ask myself. So when he sent me to go to Australia, I happily obliged, went to Australia, and a couple of weeks after arriving in Australia, that's when Ajahn Chah had a stroke and he couldn't speak anymore. And that's why I've been stuck in Australia for the past 40 years. He couldn't ask me to go anywhere else. So, and that's actually true. So you don't, it doesn't really matter where you go to practice. Important thing is to make it work, to give it everything you've got, put a lot of energy into it, and see what happens. And when you do that, you don't have to worry so much. And it's the same in meditation. You sit down, close your eyes. What's easier to do than sit down and doing nothing? Trouble is that that's something we've lost the art of doing nothing, just being here and trying to figure out what's actually going on. It's one of the reasons why one of those favourite meditations which I teach, and I'm sure you've heard it many times, was the Emperor's Three Questions meditation. When is the most important time? Now is the only time ever. So now is the most important time. If you're worried about the future, this is where your future is being made right now. And try and think about the past, that's endless. The past is finished with. Now is the most important time. The most important person in the world, Emperor's Three Questions, is the person right in front of you, whoever that happens to be. If you're alone, that's you. But right now, it's all those people on the screen right in front of me. You're right in front of me. Each one of you is the most important person in the world. And when I close my eyes and start meditating, the most important meditation object is what I'm aware of right now, whatever that is. You don't discriminate amongst people. You don't discriminate amongst mind objects. Whatever's right in front of you, that's the most important. And the most important thing to do is to care for this moment. Open the door of your heart to this moment with this beautiful kindness. And it's a kindness which adds the joy and the beauty to life. It's amazing that sometimes you see some people, they can notice little flowers in the forest. They can see little animals up in the trees. At night time they can see the stars in the sky. Or they can see the sunset over the Indian Ocean, which we can see from over here. All these beautiful things which you can see in the sky or on the ground or in the air, or you can feel like the wind blowing against your face. All those gorgeous things are always there, but sometimes we're just too busy doing something. We can't actually feel it or see it or be with it. So after a while, we can learn how just to quieten down, be still. Whatever's right in front of us right now is the most important thing in the whole world. And we give it kindness. And it's like if we, by giving kindness, like smiling at the world, it's like the world smiles back at us. And when we have that kindness bond, we don't need to be restless at all. Restless is always trying to find something else, and all you have right now isn't this good enough? Especially when you close your eyes and just with this moment. If you're sickly or if you're in pain, kindness helps enormously. I know of many times I've been very sick, life-threatening, I must admit, or maybe it was life-threatening a few times. But then you sort of close your eyes, you relax. What's right in front of me right now is the most important thing in the world. You're kind. And then everything gets very peaceful. It's amazing how the physical pains, the physical distress, a lot of that is made much, much, much worse by our mental reaction of trying to get rid of it or not wanting it. Making peace with it gives you a sense of freedom. You're not trying to escape. You're being here and learning from life. And the more you learn from life, of course, the wiser you get. As you get wiser, it's easier to be more free next time. And the insight keeps coming and leading to calm. The calm leads to insight. And these two things, insight and calm, they work together. You know how calm you are by how much insight you get. You know how much insight you have by just how calm you get, and how calm leads to insight. The two always work together. And this is a wonderful way of meditating with great ease. That's what meditation is supposed to be. So, in a few minutes, that's the introduction. Sometimes I keep nattering on for a while, but one of the main reasons I do that is not to give you more information. You've all got lots of information. It's actually just to brainwash you again to be calm, to relax, to not want much, not to put more stress onto you, but learning how just to be peaceful. And when you have that peacefulness to begin with, when you close your eyes, it's like you've been prepared, you know, to have some nice quiet meditation where you don't have to do anything at all. I just give the introduction and the guided meditation, and you just go along like you've been carried along in a nice boat down a very quiet, calm, comfortable river of meditation into deeper and deeper peace and deeper comfort. Nice and simple. Okay? So that's the half an hour introduction. So now we can do the guided meditation for half an hour. So here we go. So for those of you who want to stretch your legs, I can't see your legs, so you can stretch them whichever way you wish. And if you, I told some of the monks you can always do this, that once you start the guided meditation, you can always press a button so it freezes the screen. And all the people watching you think that, wow, you sit so still because the screen is rising. But no, I won't do that. So here we go. So the first thing to do is please close your eyes. With the eyes closed, again, it gives you more opportunity, more space in your brain to be aware of the feelings in your body. And listen to the sound of my voice. You can hear more when you're not distracted by sights. You can feel more in your body. And that's what we're going to start with. Do a very quick body scan. Then I normally sit down on a floor. I very rarely sit meditation on a chair. Usually only when I'm doing a guided meditation on Zoom or something. So one of the first things I do is find out how the soles of my feet feel on the carpet in this little room in which we're sitting, which I'm sitting in. I always like to keep, if possible, socks off, so I can feel the bare skin of the soles of my feet on this carpet and get to know the texture of the carpet. Even just moving my feet from the left to the right, fidgeting them. Because sometimes the feelings in the skin on the carpet, they can be gorgeous. In our retreat center, because the weather is so warm, you don't need to wear shoes, and it's always really clean. You can feel the different textures in our retreat center, the textures of the concrete, the texture of the tiles, the texture of the bamboo floors, the texture of the grass, the texture of the stone on the monuments. They've all got a different texture to them, like a different flavor. And after a while, you can start to really enjoy how everything feels. You're becoming much more aware and you're discovering the joy of the different awarenesses. At the same time, because I'm becoming aware of the feelings in my feet, I can relax my feet. You may think that that's impossible, but you try month after month, year after year, and you can soon learn how to take your feet and bring them to a very deep state of relaxation. My toes feel at ease. The heels are comfortable. And just the skin feels at ease. There's nothing pressing on it. And then I move that awareness up to my ankles. And those ankles have a special type of feeling. It's different than the knee feelings. Once I get to be sensitive to those feelings, you can check that everything is okay, making sure there's not too much pressure on anything. And there was, and I actually just relaxed my lower legs. I moved the knees slightly apart. And you go up your lower legs to my knees. And as I pass the different parts of my body, I always wish everything well. As if I were to see you, you know, face to face, and I would always wish you well, and may you be happy today. And may you know that, you know, if you do get sick, there's always monks there to chant for you, care for you, look after you. We're friends, as I dedicate that friendship to my knees. Just that much, you can feel the knees relaxing and becoming more at ease. Then to the thighs, as I move up those big muscles. Yes, sitting on a chair, but still there's pressure on those thighs. I've got to make sure they're all comfortable. Sometimes I make mistakes, but nevertheless, I just go past every part of my body, being kind to it on the way. So everything realizes they are cared for. Even that much in your family, just your family members know you care for them. Sometimes that's enough. I get to my butt, sitting on this soft cushioned chair, and I can feel it, and it feels really nice. It feels at ease. So I pass that by and go up to my waist. Actually now I feel that my back is in a bad position. And once I feel that there's something needed to be done, I don't hesitate. I'm now straightening up my back. And I feel so much better. You don't have to straighten up your back, whatever works for you. I ask my body, "Body, what do you need? Let me know and I will comply." I always have this friendship to my body. I don't try and train it or discipline it. I care for it. And my back feels comfortable now. I go to the front of my body and just go up, especially on the inside, because there's always like organs in there. This is my 72nd year now. So those organs have all done really, really well over these years. Never had really big problems. But I still check all my digestive tracts to make sure they're at ease. And I know that sometimes you did have indigestion, sometimes bad indigestion. And just all you did with it was just be kind to it. It's like you're not overreacting. And you can be so kind to it, be peaceful with it, that it settles down and heals itself. And go up to my stomach. You can feel it. It's at ease. It's comfortable. Go up to my lungs. the organs in the back, I'm not really quite sure of, but I can feel that everything is nice and calm. They seem to be all at ease, doing whatever they need to do without any problems. Go up to the heart. All those muscles and ligaments in my torso, making sure that everything feels okay. But giving them kindness on the way. And some gratitude as well. Thank you, body, for looking after me so well over all these years. And what, I don't take you for granted, I care for you. I get to my shoulders. I can feel them. Are your shoulders tight or are they relaxed? Right now my shoulders are quite tight. So I just wish them to be relaxed. And with mindfulness, it does give you the opportunity to get feedback. Now I ask my shoulders again, how are you now? They've relaxed a little bit. So I'll keep on doing that. And you can feel that you've learned how to relax the shoulders because the mindfulness keeps on telling you it's getting better and better and better. Then I go down my arms, past my elbows. If ever you knock your elbow or there's a pain in there, just spend a little time with it. Give it kindness. Like open out that area for your own kind, loving kindness energy to heal things. I go down my arms, past my wrists, to my hands. And everyone should be reasonably aware of your hands because they've got so many nerve endings there. So see if you can try and find the most comfortable position for your hands right now. Really just give that extra little bit of kindness. Hands, I care for you. So how can I put you in a place where you are as happy, content as possible? And then go back out to my shoulders and my neck, making sure my head is well balanced on top of the neck. And then my face, the head. With the face, I'd like to be aware of the tension in the muscles of my forehead, around my eyes, around my mouth. I can feel they're quite tight there. So now relax everything. I can feel those muscles relaxing. And the cause of some of that tightness, I don't know, maybe some emotions earlier today or whatever. The emotional world inside, which causes a tightness on the face, that softens as well. It's a good segue from the body to the mind. Because when the mind is pretty relaxed, those muscles relax too. And then I'm aware of the whole body. Sitting on a chair, relaxed to the max. And I hope you can also experience this at this point, be mindful of the pleasure of relaxation. It's really nice. It's peaceful, it's beautiful, it's delightful. Having a body which is just sitting here, so relaxed, you feel you can sit here like this for hours. You cared for your body. Now your body's caring for you. It's a feeling, it's not a philosophy. I'm not thinking, I'm feeling. Sometimes I feel I could be enjoying it too much. But no, just relaxed to the max, because every time I notice the delight, the pleasure of physical relaxation, the relaxation gets more solid and more peaceful. But eventually I turn on to the mind. And one of the first things I do is to get into this present moment. And there's an old exercise which I've taught for years about imagining I'm carrying two heavy bags, one in the left hand, one in the right hand. The left hand bag, like many shopping bags, has on the outside the words, but not normal words, it has the words PAST. Because in that bag, it's a representation of my past. All the things which I've endured, all the wonderful successes and pains and unfinished business as well, all the hurt and hurt which is done to me, all carried in this big bag in my left hand. And I know I've carried it for too long because my arm aches and my shoulder hurts. And I notice in my right hand there's another bag. On the outside of that bag are the letters FUTURE, the future. And that's all the worries and concerns which are packed into that bag. Not just worries, but the hopes and dreams as well. And my right arm and right shoulder hurts too, because I've been carrying that around for way too long. So now focusing on the left hand bag, I imagine my body just bending to the left, allowing me to lower that bag to the ground. When it meets the floor, then all the burden, the weight, disappears. That allows me to move my hand away from the handle, so my left arm and shoulder can relax, recuperate, re-energize for a few minutes. And then I do the same with the bag in my right hand, the future. I put that down too, slowly. When it meets the floor, the weight disappears, and that allows me to move my hand away, so my right arm and shoulder can also relax. And I imagine myself standing between these two heavy bags, my past and my future. And in between, where I'm standing, is where I can rest and relax, rebuild my strength. And that's so important. I'm in the present moment, and it's delightful, like the body was delightful when it rested and relaxed. Now my mind can relax in the present moment. Those bags will be there for later on, but right now I can put them down and rest. You need this energy. And also, I learn how to be more silent. Words are important, but there are too many of them. In the silence, there's more joy. Be kind to this moment. And it's kind back to you. You can start to feel peace growing inside. I will become quiet now, the next 10 minutes. but for you, I will be silent. Please leave those two bags on the floor. getting close to the end of the meditation. Please do not open your eyes yet. Now is the time to appreciate how peaceful you are, how silent it is inside your mind. And see if you can notice how pleasant that is. To be able to appreciate the delight of a mind which is relaxed. What causes that delight? The ability to be silent in this moment, putting all the burdens aside for a while. Then we start to experience how our body feels. Body just sitting here, relaxed. It tends to heal itself, energize itself, and free itself from any of the aches and pains of life. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. When the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, it's a signal to come out from the meditation. Wonderful. Okay. So, now usually we talk about something or other. Sometimes we have some questions. Are there any questions there today?
We don't have any in the chat yet, John. But I'm sure some people have some questions.
Okay.
Would anybody like to unmute themselves and ask a question?
I have one.
Yeah.
It's a small question. In the Metta Sutta, it goes over in my head when we say medium, short, or small.
Yeah.
What happened to the tall people?
Okay, well, a medium tall. And the short. In other words, that's just an example of making sure that everything is included.
I thought so, but they just say short, I'm short, and yeah. I'm small, and my husband's medium,
yes.
But it doesn't say anything about large people or obese people. Or
indeed.
It's just something that goes over in my head, over and over.
It's just medium, plus, or short, less, I mean the whole lot.
The whole lot?
Yeah, the main point is just that may all beings be happy well, whatever living beings they may be. So, and there's no discrimination. That's why they're even saying all these other beings, beings to be born or yet to be born. So every
time...
That's
what I get.
Yeah, so all beings. Because it's one of our problems as human beings is we discriminate against people. You know, we say that this being is better than that being, or that being doesn't count. And, you know, you can see that, especially if people are somehow physically different or emotionally, mentally different, sometimes they feel excluded. And that's one of the reasons why that simile which I developed over many years about living in forests. You see, all the trees, every tree in the forest where I live, are always bent and crooked. They're all twisted. There's never a perfect tree in the sense of one which is not damaged, because they live close together. There's storms, some trees lose their limbs, even animals bang into them sometimes. So all the trees in the forests are always bent, twisted, and they've got damaged barks. So I remember telling a big conference of people and a mental health week here in Perth, if you think you're damaged goods, welcome. Welcome to the forest of humanity. We're all damaged in different ways. And so you all belong. And that was really important, to know that you belong. And then secondly, that those people say, yes, but I'm more damaged than most. So lucky, because you are the most beautiful trees in the forest, the ones which are the most damaged, the most bent and twisted. Some of those trees which you see are just gorgeous, but a tree which is dead straight, yeah, it gets cut down very quickly for timber. But you know, the really beautiful ones, they last a long time. So anyway, that's what I like.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Question.
Please unmute yourself. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, from London. Okay, yeah.
Okay, I have a question about the purpose of life. What context I want to know what the purpose of life? Because I believe everybody has some purpose of life from God. What do you think about the purpose of life? Can you find it and how?
Oh, okay, the purpose of life. One of the things with the purpose of life, when I mentioned this many years ago and people liked it, it's not the full story, but it's most of it. The purpose of your life is the purpose you give to your life. So in other words, it's not something which is outside of you somewhere. It's what are you going to do with your life? What purpose are you going to give to it? And what purpose can you give to it? And that purpose you give to life, you know it's a really good purpose when it helps so many other people. In a deeper sense, that I remember many years ago, I'm getting to be an old monk now, so I'm bringing up all those examples from when I was young as a monk. And I remember going to a retreat in Scotland, and at that retreat I was just the attendant monk, not the teacher. And people would come in with the same old questions, even then, the same old questions. And I was getting bored. But then this lady came in and said to the teacher, I've just come in here to thank you for saving my life. And the way she said it was with such integrity, she really meant that. And I like woke up. And what had this monk done? And anyway, she mentioned what happened. And it was real, and I made a resolution from that time that the purpose of my life as a monk, as a teacher, would be to have someone come and say that to me. Say, thank you for saving my life, Ajahn Brahm. And you know, many people have done that now, and many, hundreds. I'm not just exaggerating, I'm trying to be accurate. Imagine what that's like when somebody comes up to you and they said, you know, we saw you on YouTube, and you saved my life. Really, thank you. That's a pretty high purpose. And so if you can do anything like that, you realize your life has got so much purpose to it. How that actually works, what you actually do, just little acts of kindness can mean so much to other people. A smile, just when everybody else is just so miserable. A little bit of positive energy. Similes like, you know, turning dog poo into beautiful bananas. Things like that give people like hope and kindness, and they don't have to have a perfect world to have a happy life. That make any sense?
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
Ajahn, Jake has a question for you. Jake, would you like to unmute?
Yes, thank you, Ajahn. John, Wendy, and Jake here.
Okay.
How to convey peace to one who assumes you're not a peaceful being?
It takes while. After a while, the peace which you have will just rub off on them. If there are people you associate with a lot, you know, sometimes you don't realize what they think of you. And after some years, they think, oh, you're such a peaceful person. Look, here's an example. I remember just some years ago, we were having problems with clay trucks coming past our monastery, really making lots of noise, and they were dangerous as well, going down the steep road. And so we remember we went to see one of our local politicians. Many of you in Australia know her, Alana McTiernan. And we went into her office. It was the last appointment of the day. And when she sort of escorted us out afterwards, she said, I really like you monks coming into my office because you are so peaceful and calm. Even though, you know, they have a problem with these clay trucks. You know, I like you coming into my office just because you bring some peace and calm which other people don't bring in. And so this is actually where, you know, we learnt just how not doing anything in particular to show off calm, just your whole nature. Other people really value that. And I can appreciate that, you know, being a politician, a senior politician, just, you know, how you always got people on your back either criticizing you or asking for something. But to be able to just to come and just be calm and kind, that was something quite weird. So if you can do that, people will start telling you that you're a very calm person. And it's amazing just the sort of help and assistance you can get, and how that it's not just them giving you assistance, it's, you know, you giving them. So this wonderful positive attitude in life of calm. In the end, they see it. Does that really answer the question? I think I haven't really got to the heart of the question yet. So, do you want to?
I think it's a pretty substantial answer. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And Sarah has a question on the chat. Would you like me to read it for you, Ajahn?
Yes, please do, sir.
Okay. Is there any advice if you feel like stress is coming from your body or from society rather than from your mind that you could offer?
If it's coming from your body, just thank your body for teaching you something. I remember just examples like some of the teachers at school, which I didn't like at all. Sometimes you learn so much from them. And so sometimes you've got a stressful body or a body which is hurting you and it's not giving you any peace. Just sometimes say, thank you, body. There must be something which I'm doing wrong or something which I'm not understanding. So I have to keep on going back to the same class every year until we learn. And after a while, you know, your body, when you learn about it and how it works, then your body will just be kind to you. When it's kind to you, that, you know, this doesn't cause you much difficulty anymore. Sure, of course it can cause you stress, but some of that stress is like normal. It's just what you have to do. You sit on the toilet, there's a little bit of stress until the poo comes out. And you just want to learn how to make that sort of as easy as possible so it doesn't cause you more stress. But there's always things which come up in life which you just take for granted. This is just what happens. And it's the same with for society. You know, sometimes people think that society is getting worse or it's getting better or it's whatever. Society is always the same. All the time, there's always problems and difficulties. Depends on just, you know, what part of society you want to look at. So, you know, when it comes to society, if society doesn't cause you stress, it's the part of society we look upon causes you stress. Yeah, there's some difficult countries to live in, but a lot of times those difficulties come when we don't know how to deal with it in an appropriate way. As far as I was taught as a young monk, that as long as you have enough food to eat, you know, enough clothes for your body, a place to stay at night, you don't need much, and medicines in time of sickness, those are the four requisites. If you have those, what more do you want in life? Those are the basic things by which you can live. Everything else is just kind of extra. So as long as you have those things, that's wonderful. Have some more, that's just a bit like gravy, like it's extra sauce, you know, on your main meal. So I lower my expectations. You know, many people say, no, we have to raise our expectations to be a successful person. No, raise your expectations makes you a stressful person. Lower your expectations. And any of you, that's one of the things in our modern world, we want to have a partners in life, but our expectations are just way too high. So lower your expectations of the one who you want to spend your life with, and then ask them to lower their expectations too, and then they may commit to you. Our expectations are way too high. Is that okay?
Gabriel would like to ask you a question, if you're ready.
Okay.
Yes, Gabriel. Hello, actually.
Hi. Yeah.
I am struggling with obesity. Oh, so yeah. With all my extra kindness I have on me. And so it is because I overeat quite a lot, and at times I eat uncontrollably.
Okay.
And I was wondering if you can share some wisdom, advice with you.
Okay. Sometimes if you can find happiness somewhere else, not just like eating, but just like walking. I got to hear from Austria. Austria is a very beautiful country. Do you live in the city or in the forest?
Yes, I live in Vienna, but I have two beautiful forests close to me.
Yeah, we'll just go and commute with them. Have a walk in them, because you enjoy the walking so much. When you enjoy the exercise, it's easier to do, and it means it satisfies, you know, your bodily need for some joy. So you don't need to eat, you get the exercise. You're enjoying the wonderful healing of being in a forest. That's what I would do.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Excellent. There was a message there from John Pepper.
Yes, there is actually. He says he's preparing to go on a retreat.
Yeah.
And he's asking, how can he handle hunger if he doesn't eat after lunch? His experience of hunger is that he can barely function.
Oh,
and
really?
Also, he'd like to know what is the purpose of not eating.
Yeah. I know John is, he's not a young man anymore. I know him for a long time. Yeah, John Pepper. So, oh, there he is. Hi, John. One thing, if you don't see food, you don't smell food, and there's no sort of food being cooked, people don't tend to feel hungry. That's why going on a retreat in a retreat center is much better than going on a retreat, you know, by yourself or in a city or in a house, because you see it and you smell it all the time. I was just telling some of our members, you know, we're always raising funds for something, that many years ago we had a cake store. We're raising funds for selling cakes. And so one Friday afternoon, all these people baked cakes, and they decided to leave it in the temple overnight because it'll be ready for the morning. The trouble was I was in a room next to the kitchen. So all night you could smell these freshly baked cakes. And I mean, that was just so delicious, you know, in the smell of it. I hardly slept that night. I had to ask people afterwards, if you do that ever again, please keep the cakes somewhere else. And I hadn't, you know, not really interested in eating, but because they were right next to me, just really got hungry all night. So see if you could, you know, just be apart from the food, so you don't see it, you don't smell it. But also that if you do need to eat because of some problem with your digestion or something, then please get permission from whoever's running that retreat to have just something small in the evening. Because again, the main purpose is just for simplicity. Now look, no, I've been not eating in the afternoon for 48 years. No, I can still put on weight. And you just don't get hungry in the evening. You know, monastery, you don't see anything. Sometimes people cook something in the evening to prepare for the following day. But because you don't see, and I've been doing this for such a long time, you don't feel hungry. And that's just because I got used to it. But if you're just going on a retreat and you need to eat, and especially if there's some medication you need, please ask the retreat managers and say, look, I think I really need to eat. You know, can I please have something? And if that's the case, if that was my retreat, yeah, sure, no worries, you have something to eat.
Okay. Thank you very much for that advice.
Yeah.
I think the fact that there'll be no food on show and no availability of food would probably be sufficient.
Yeah, okay. But don't get it to the point where it makes you feel really sick and you're not sort of at ease and you're not at peace. If it gets like that and you get very, very, very sick, then please have something to eat.
Okay, thank you.
And Sam's left a comment for you, Ajahn, in the chat. Why do you think the arms balls are so big?
They're not all big. Ajahn Sujata, he got this really tiny arms bowl. But then afterwards, when we just go on arms round, there's sometimes so many people. And so we can't eat all the food in an arms bowl. I've got one of the biggest arms bowls. But in no way in the world can I eat all of that. So what I do is so people can give to me. In other words, so more people can put food in my bowl. We share it out with everybody afterwards. It's not that I need such a big bowl, but people need a big bowl to put all the food into. It's a different way of looking at the generosity. You know that great story? This was from about His Holiness the Dalai Lama just so many years ago, apparently when he was still in Tibet. And that was a story when some American journalist had managed to get into Tibet and was doing an article about him, and then was following him around when he went on a tour in some of the remoter villages of Tibet so many years ago. And the American journalist got really upset because people would line up to offer all sorts of gifts to the Dalai Lama. And then on one village, this very, very, very poor lady, obviously just in rags, came up to the Dalai Lama and offered him a skirt, like a woman's skirt. And the Dalai Lama accepted it. And the journalist just got so angry. Why are you accepting that from a person who needs it so much more than you do? You're a man, you don't wear skirts. Why did you accept it? And then the Dalai Lama replied, because she needed to give it to me. He said, whatever I get, we share it out in the next village. We don't keep it because I don't wear skirts. And I'm sure they should get something from what was given in the previous village. The whole point was we were giving and sharing. That's a beautiful thing to do. So sometimes, you know, people give me things which I don't need. No way will I... when I make use of them, but still you accept them and then you give them to somebody else. And that way people feel quite happy they've been giving something to you and you can give it to someone else. It shares it around a lot. It wasn't that the Dalai Lama needed it, but the woman needed to give it. And that just put the whole idea of what generosity is the other way around. Sometimes as a monk, I'm being honest with you, I get frustrated sometimes. You see people who are in need, and I'm not allowed to give anything. I don't have money. I can't give money. Money belongs to the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. And say, so, can I give some money to? You feel quite frustrated. You can't help others, so you try and help people in other ways, best ways you can. It's wonderful to be able to give. It's great joy and happiness to be able to... Oh, what happened? Years ago, I was over in... travelling somewhere to somewhere, and I was in Singapore and just walking through the airport. And as I was walking through the airport there was just some traveller was on a bench trying to get a few hours of sleep. And she was obviously just not very successful. She was rolling around on the bench. And I just had in my bag some of these iPads and the eye shades they gave you on the aircraft. And so I got a pair out and I said, try these. And this lady never seen me in her life before. And this monk comes past and offers her some eye shades. And she said, oh yeah, thank you, and put them on. And it's such a simple thing. I've never forgotten that. Just, you know, you gave a tiny bit of kindness. It didn't have much I could give, but I could give some eye shades. And I don't know if it even worked or not, but anyway, that made me feel happy. I needed to give it. At least you put them on anyway.
Are we happy to have another message in the chat for you? Would you like to read it?
Yeah, sure.
About right effort. I'm really good at avoiding negative states, maintaining positive states, and generating positive states. But can you help with how to eliminate negative states? I get infuriated and terrified with apparently good reasons, although it's getting less with good meds.
Yeah. So what happens? What's the best way to avoid burglars coming into your house? Having good friends inside your house. That's the best burglar alarm, having good people in there all the time. And the burglars see there's too many good people in there and they will never break in. Always having good mental states is the best way to avoid bad states. When you cultivate good energy, good states of mind, lots of forgiveness, then that negative stuff tends to not be able to come in. And you know, I used to notice that whenever I used to go into prisons, some very sort of dangerous people inside the prisons. And you know, some of them had such long sentences, whatever they did to me, if they raped me or beat me up, it wouldn't really affect their sentences that much. But nevertheless, you know, you were kind to them, they were kind to you, and I felt so safe in there. And the reason was that because you weren't trying to get rid of bad states, you were creating more good states. And seeing the goodness inside each one of those prisoners, seeing the goodness inside of you, seeing the goodness in life. So cultivating the goodness was for me the most effective way of being safe and also avoiding just bad states coming into my own mind. And yet sometimes people do stupid things and they do bad things. I was just, you know this saying, one of my famous sayings, is, and because we have all these little giveaway stickers which people can put on their cars, and one of those stickers is one of my sayings, don't worry about seeking revenge, because karma will get the bastards anyway. You know that one? And that's very Australian, it's very popular apparently. So anyway, I just gave some to Ajahn Vamani. He's going to take them over to the United States tomorrow. He's going over there. So I hope he doesn't get checked at the customs and say, what have you got this for? But anyway, just things they give away for people. And it's, you know, beautiful ways of looking at things. Don't need to worry about the negative states of revenge. Karma works everything out. Leave it for karma. Does that answer that?
Martha, are you okay with
me? No, it doesn't. No. I mean, I know that. I really don't worry about that. How can you eliminate it when it gets so strong inside?
Oh, okay.
It was helpful this morning at the end of the meditation to see how pleasant it was to have a calm mind. And that is very, very helpful. But sometimes I just literally, the negative states arise and in an overpowering way.
Okay.
So if fury and terror, what happens to me, because I can't get basic medicines, essentially.
Okay. There's a couple of things there. One thing is, over here in Perth, we have things like called bushfires. And bushfires, you know, can destroy, you know, this whole monastery. Very close to destroying this monastery many, many years ago when I was here. A big crown fire. With a bushfire, if we can catch it early, it's not dangerous. It soon builds up its power. So with that big rage and fury, please catch it earlier and earlier and earlier. And the earlier you catch it, the easier it is to find skillful means, strategies, to actually to deal with it. I'm not quite sure what those strategies could be. Maybe it could be listening to a Dharma talk, listen to some music, just somehow how to distract your mind, you know, from the difficulties which, you know, that rage is manifesting. Catch it as early as possible, it's easier to do. And if you are really enraged, you just admit you lost it that time, but it doesn't last forever, it will pass away. And just, but it hurts, and it's not nice, and sometimes if other people see you, it makes it worse. So if you can somehow have a little safe room somewhere, you can go and sit in there, and just big smiley faces on the wall or something to try and get you out of that rage. It can sometimes help. So you need your
This is where you guys have helped me so much, because I did do what somebody just wrote the chat and the chat, listening to y'all really loud, and it does help. That has helped a lot.
Excellent.
But yeah, I guess that is what we're practicing for, so we can see it earlier, so that we can stop it more quickly.
Yes, indeed.
Before it gets so in the Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for being a satisfied customer.
I think we're all satisfied customers tonight.
But I'll just add one extra thing for Martha. You know why it is in Buddhist temples, why you always have to take your shoes off and leave them outside when you go into the temple?
No.
Because that means you've got nothing to throw at the monk if he says something stupid.
Something wicked this way comes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
well, Arjun, if there's nothing else, shall we finish this evening? And would you like to finish with a blessing for us?
Oh, yes, yeah. A nice blessing for you.
Hey, I'm so sorry to interrupt. Joseph's just sent a message in chat, and it's accidentally come just to me. It's only come to me, Joseph. Did you want to copy and paste it and read both?
Yeah, I can ask directly. My question was the previous discussion about emotion and stress.
Yes.
So for example, during driving on highways or roads, there are a lot of aggressive drivers. So we need to keep calm, alert, and it's difficult to get more emotions because we need to react, and that's difficult to be really bad. So how to...
Yes, but sometimes that you know that's going to happen. This is the nature of the world, and don't expect the world to be different. Because, you know, sometimes people go through all sorts of personal stuff in their lives, and sometimes they're on the road driving. So just give them a bit of space, if you possibly can. And don't expect everyone to be as perfect as you. And so
yeah, I try to give them the faith that the situation is that as I go to the difficult situation, even when I push out from my place.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, they can have your place. In other words, be soft. Okay, you know, you may have to spend longer driving, but you'll also have much a longer life as well, a more peaceful life, a higher quality life. It's much better to have a high quality journey from wherever you're going to your destination than to actually to get there quicker or get there on time and be so stressed out.
If this situation happens, I have experienced that if I go to some country, I have at least one situation that there were some aggressive drivers. At least one day. I drive the emotion to the
end. Yeah, we'll just say that's your test. And you keep on having that same problem every day until you learn how just to let it go. It's like life tests you, gives you these challenges until you pass them, then they don't happen anymore. That's what I've noticed.
Okay.
Okay, well, shall we wind up now? And,
The blessing.
Blessing.
Yes, certainly. Here we go. Sabarogo inimuto sabasanta pavajito sabaveramati gando nibuto chatuang bhava sabitiyo vivachantu sabarogo vinasatu ma te bhavan vantarayo sukhi digayu gopava api vadanha siritsa nichang Uta pachalino chataro dhamma watanti ayuvano sukhang balang. Very good. I wish you all the blessings of the new year. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Thank you. Good night, all.
Good night.
Thank you, Aja.
Good night.
Thank you, Aja.